should also do that when they start to wake up already.
Okay, don't worry. Mine is a bit bigger than over there, so.
How long do you suppose I'm going to speak?
Well, okay, the whole thing is still 4:15.
Yes, my name is Anna Balletbaum. Balletbaum, we spell it. And I am, usually I teach in the university. I used to teach radio and television. But as I became a congresswoman, I just gave up my dedication to the university, and so I'm trying to make politics, that it's not something easy to do, because I think this is one of the business more up to the men all over the world, but also I realize in the United States too, as far as I realize the number of women that really are making politics. So when I was not doing real history, let's say that, and studying history, because I have also studied history, I wrote a small paper, and this paper was trying to explain, the evolution about the women's right in Spain under the Franquism and the struggle of the rights that we had under the Republic. This is really just to put the reality of today. So, in some minutes only, to tell you that, we the Spanish, we have been always living under moving situation. That means that our periods of democracy have been always very short, in spite the periods where authoritarianism and not liberties were on. This is usually the background of our history. But I should say one of the longest, especially because it's one of the nearest, it was the 40 years that we were under Franco regime. You know, Franco just, they fight against what we call the legality, was the Republic legality. We win the elections, the Republicans win the elections, and then he struggled all the rights and put down all the laws. Just to make you a little bit thinking about that, under Republic we got divorce. In the part of the country where I live, it means Catalonia, this is on the east of the country, northeast of the country, we approve a law of abortion, and to tell you this happened in the 1932, so it was really quite progressive in that moment of the history. After Franco wins the war, he just gave up all the rights. And the main thing to know is that he forbade to be able to make politics, to associate. And he said it as something else that is quite interesting, is that he chose the Catholic Church to be what he called the official church. And so all the laws that must be approved must have the point of view of the official Catholic Church. So the Catholic point of view was the point of reference of anything. So abortion was not permitted. Divorce was not permitted. We make a politic of what we call to get more people. So especially also because we lost a lot of people during the war. But it was a sort of they try to make a sort of premium for as many children as you had. So for sure, because of this, and also because the Catholic Church didn't allow it to, it was not permitted to make birth control and anything of that sort. Also, the society was really very patriarchal, very hierarchic, and it is clear that man is the head of the house, and that the names of the sons and daughters, the men give them. And in case you are a married woman, you were not able sometimes to give to put the names of your own in the children. At least this happened at the beginning of the years. What has happened, this is well little with the situation, and also just to tell you that the education of women, they just give it in exclusivity to what we call Falange, you know, it was the fascism, the party of the fascism. And it was Pilar Primo de Rivera, that means the sister of one of the main chefs, that has the priority of looking after the girls. And she used and education and anything. And this has two points of view, one political, so it means they teach you how to be a good Spanish from her, their point of view, and the second, they used to teach you how you must be a good woman, and also what you have to do and what you don't have to do, and especially they emphasize that, you know, that the woman is just what we call the rest of the warrior, you know, that thing, and that you must not try to just to be the same as men, because this is not our destiny. So this is one of the things. Just to see that the people of my generation, we grow up and came all in a situation not very easy at the point of view of feminism and women's rights. What has happened in Spain in the last 2 years? Well, in the last 2 years, that means from 1977, maybe before also, 1975. In 1975, we...
12 years.
Yes, 12 years, let's say, but in 1975, 11 exactly, in 1975, you remember, the United Nations said that was the International Year of Women. And on that moment, in Spain, we still had the dictatorship, so a lot of women, they regret and they didn't want to work with the authorities because they were not democratic and they were against the women's right, that's clear. They only want to put something official to, you know, to wash the face. And then we start a very strong movement, I should say, that spread all over the country in small groups of women, making discussion and you know, and self-conscious about what was to be a woman in Spain, which were the rights we would like to have and do not have, etc. I should say that this flow grow up and flow very well, and 1 year later, and especially in Barcelona, that is the capital of this part of the country, we make a very big conference, a women's conference, and I should say really it was very successful, so successful that lots of, you know, the structures start to move a little bit. And men, you know, you always know that you are successful when men get afraid, you understand what I mean? If they really get afraid and start to worry, that means that you are on the right way. So they really start to worry a lot. And so it means we were all right and the right way. And from that time appears in the women's movement in Spain start to go and to grow and to be seen, because at to that moment it was not possible to make reunion and to, you know, just to make discussion, it was forbidden. So I should say that from 77 to 80, that means the first 5 years, what we did in Spain, it was to resolve some of the legal problems that we have. Not all, but some of the legal problems that we have. For instance, in the after the first election, that is in the 77, for the first time we got free elections in Spain. And the Camera, the Congress, what they were going to do, they said we are a constituent camera, we are going to make a new constitution. And the new constitution, just for the first time, settled up some things very important for us. It is establish the equality between men and women, forbid not to be paid differently, men and women. Establish that you must have the same rights to education, to the vote, to the legality, to anything. And also, they just leave the official religion as a Catholic. They don't say Spanish is a Catholic country, because before it was like that. You are Catholic or you are not. That's the thing. So that means that we try to get what, to make a difference about what was, you know, the civil society, not so close to religion, and not, of course, not close to the one religion, even if it is the majority in Spain. This is, of course, Catholic religion. And this means that we have settled the points, the main points to make a change with our constitution. So what happened secondly is that some behaviors that were considered were punished, well, then they were not, at that moment they became not legally, but they lost the punishment. I don't know if I explained, because my English is not so good. Though, for instance, if a woman, a married woman went with another man in my country, that means that she loses the right over the children, she loses everything. And especially what happened is that to find out that you have been adulterer, for a woman it was only necessary to demonstrate on our civil code, our civil law, that he was with him. I mean, just follow, you know, just sit or go inside the house or something like that. But to demonstrate that the man did the same thing, you should find him on the bed and just doing the thing, otherwise it was not demonstrated. So there was a sort of the very difference of the consideration of the typology of the delict. And also, there is another thing quite important, it was punished. I mean, if the man find the woman, he said he could go to the justice and say, punish that. So she could go in prison. Formally, she could go in prison. So this is the point of view of what I used to say, the interference of the state over the private life of the people. Because the state must not punish what is a private conduct. So, this is another thing, you arrange with your husband, or if you agree on being like that or not like that, but the state must not make an interpretation about private things. That's something also about the homosexuality and so on. So what happened in that moment is that this sort of thing were not punished. And also another thing is that birth control, pills and some things like that were not punished. Because up to that moment, it was punished. I mean, it is supposed that you were taking pills only as a medicine to make a regulation, but not as a preventive to not to get, not to have a children. So from the 77 to the 80, from the 75 to the 80, we make a lot of change in that sense. We reform our civil code, and then we also bring up a law of divorce. That, I think, is the main point. After that time, after the 80, there is still some things to be done. And things to be done, as for example, to make law about abortion. And this thing became only 2 years ago, 1 year and a half ago. And it is a law that if you compare it with other countries, it's not really very bad. It might be not good enough. But what happened is that in our parliament, there is some laws that you cannot bring them out even if you have the majority, because you have to have two-thirds of the total. And even if the socialists, we were in government at that time, and we are still now, and we had the majority, we did not have enough. So we had to share with other groups. And at that point, our proposal was to bring up a law about to allow abortion in case of BL, in case that the mother could die, in case of the children was malformed, and also we wanted to put economic reasons. But economic reasons were not accepted, and we had to give it up. What the law, I should say, is not bad, but laws are bad and good, that depends of how you really want them to run on. And this is the point I would like to just tell you now, that I should say that from the point of view of legality, We are now really one of the countries in the world that the legality between men and women are better settled. We have signed all the papers about the United Nations about the rights of women. We are one of the few countries that we have signed all of them about legality in salaries, legality in treatment, just to add to maternity, everything. We have done everything. And we have transformed quite a lot our laws. But what happened now is something I used to say as if law is necessary, but it's not enough. You must make it goes on. Run. And for instance, one of the examples that the things doesn't run as we would like it, it's the abortion law. If they did abortion on the sense the law permitted, it wouldn't be the best thing in the world, but things were wrong, and a lot of women wouldn't have such a lot of problems. But there is a very strong opposition, about what I say, the corporative feelings of medicines, lawyers, justice, and so, and even the police, when you go there and say they belong me, it's so difficult to demonstrate it. That there is a lot of women that just give up, and then maybe they have to choose to go some other countries near to Spain to make abortion. What do we think that is the result of this? The result of this is that we have done a lot, but this is not enough. We must do much more. In which sense? First of all, we should try to incorporate women to the social and political life. This is one thing that, for instance, you don't have a lot of women making politics, but American women are very incorporated in the social and political life. This is something you can see. I mean, a lot of professional women, you are really, and you are very well organized. That's another thing I have found. Well, maybe, the one is at home doesn't see the things so better as if you see to the other one and then look back to you. But, I mean, I have seen here as far as, it's not the first time I come here. But still this week I am here, I have been in touch with a lot of organization of women here. And really, it's going, at least you seem more powerful than we are. I don't know the reality, but you seem more powerful than we are. So we think that we should, we should try to do something in the same way. That means to be strong enough, not to change the laws, just to make them run on. Just to make them that they really are really, and they follow it. And I think the lobbyistic way is not a bad way. Another thing to tell you is that we think we must put women more into social, political, and cultural life. To tell you something is that the number of women that, for instance, are members of the trade unions in Spain, it's very low. It's really very low. It shouldn't be more than 7% of the total members of the trade unions. The number of women that do belong to a political party in Spain, the big politics and are inside a political party, are also very few. It should be something about 12%, no more. Some parties are a little more. Maybe the Socialist Party should be maybe 16 or 17. But this is really nothing. Women that look after being representative in cultural associations, social associations, so they are really very few. I mean, we still have too much the model of woman as a household keeper. And so that means that on the real life, we are not strong enough to change things or to make things go as we wish. Last experience, and I'm just finishing, it is the political experience. Just the opposite of what you should have expected. We had now three elections, and the number of women, instead of getting up, it's getting down. So that means that after the first election, where everything, everything is possible, and the number of women were quite high, I think there are several reasons. One of them is because the 75, so 1975 was not very far, and we did a lot of movements in the year of the International Year of the Woman, of the Women. So the 77, the number of women that tried to get in politics and get enlisted, was not good, but it has been coming down. And another thing quite important is that we have clause list, at least for the Congress. For the Senate, you can choose the list, you can choose the name and vote whatever you like of a big list. And the people is put alphabetic in the list and just say the name and they say the party they belong, so you can choose. But in the Congress, you vote a list, so you make an option for a party. And then what happens is that the votes are, this distribution are on that sense. So the first is the one that became Congress, and then the second, and then the third. That depends on the number. And what happened in the reality is that politics is for men, and the ones that are in the top of the political party are also men. So they do the list on the sense they prefer, and they put themselves the first. And that's clear. And what happened also is that they used to put women because we make pressure, and also because I think they feeling bad. They realize that they are not right, and they are a little bit bad conscience. But they put the women from the middle of the list going down, so without many possibilities to succeed. And the demonstration of that is that in the three elections we had, the number of women that became congresswomen at the beginning, that means the day after the election, was growing on the years while the years pass by. Right? One of the reasons is because some of the men, maybe they decide to run for local elections, or they decide to run for the what we call autonomic parliament, that should be something like US state parliament, and so, or become governors or something, and then give up. And then the women's come in. So at the beginning of the elections, we were less. For instance, we were in the Congress, at the present, we were, in October of 1982, we were 18, and now we are 22. Some of the things is also because some men also died during that period, and the woman came in. But this is the real truth. Just to tell you something, that this is, whatever you think about Spain, if you study and you compare the number of women that are in the parliaments of the, what we call, the European community, it doesn't look much better. It looks much better, for instance, for Denmark, that is on the top. It is 23% of women in the parliament. It looks better for Luxembourg and for Norway. It looks better for Belgium. But there is something, and for Ireland, that's something very interesting. And the number of women, Irish women, usually make politics more than others. And one of the things you realize is that Spain, from if you say how many women are in Congress, in Senate together, the percent is 5.2. This is the percent. But there is something that we'd like you to know. Great Britain goes back for 5.1. And France go back. And also Greece. And Italy goes a little bit further, but only with 5.3. So, you know, this is something that should be discussed. Why the country that are on the north of Spain, of Europe, do in the practice, in the reality, do they have more women making real politics? Even if they look that the feminism is not such a strong movement. And the countries of the south of Europe, where the Italy, France, Spain, where the feminism could seem more stronger, but at least it seems more, you know, more in, you can see it, you think you see it more. They really don't succeed very much. They told me that your proportion here is still worse. I don't know, somebody told me that you are, because they say there is two, I haven't done the proportion, but I think it's quite bad also. And that, I'm finishing just telling you that We believe that to get together what we call women's movements, what we call women's movement, with journalist women, with political women, is the way. I mean, to make what they said a sort of, you know, sort of agreement about the three, to persuade one objective. Because if not, what happens is that you can reach the parliament, or whether you are 10 or 12, you can do anything. You just disappear like, you know, like sugar in a glass of water. And if you try very hard, they just put you down because you are, you know, you are, they don't like it, and so that's it. And so the only thing is that the ones that are in a closed box, like this parliament, should have a contact with the street, the real contact, and with the professional women, especially those ones that are working in the mass medium, to make pressure. This is the thing we think should be the way. And also to think that for some feminist women, politics, it's maybe not so good because this is a world of men, and you know, and the results are very difficult to get. But in politics, for instance, you decide the budget, and you don't only decide the money, you decide the budget, and you don't only decide, sorry, the laws, you decide the budget. And you know what happened? That I used to say that money comes, money is always the same. I mean, you have a, let's imagine that you have a big bag of money. But if you have it, somebody doesn't have it. You understand what I mean? So the money is always the same. And to make politics is only one thing. You make a politic more progressive or more conservative, that depends on from part you take the money and to whom you give it. This is no more mysterious. That depends if you take it from the ones that have it and give to the ones that don't have it, or that you make in a sort of politics, or if you take from the ones that don't have it and you give to the ones that have it, you're making another sort of politics. Maybe in your country have a big experience about that now, especially women's, black women's, and so. So that's all. And another thing, just for finish, is that we are now becoming a strong country, not very strong as money thinking, but as strong as influence, because we belong to Europe, we get now inside Europe, and we have a very good situation to be able to speak and to discuss about Arabian countries. So that means, you know, the Arabian is very near to us, and we have, you know, traditional relations, and also to South America countries. And one of the things that I would say is that we need to, you know, to convince the people of the strong world, of what we call the civilized, we call it, I don't know if it is, the civilized countries. We used to call the civilized countries, nobody knows if they are, if we are civilized or not. Because sometimes we don't make a politic very civilized, that's right. So, and I think especially that some changes, as in Nairobi they spoke of, about the necessity of looking for a new economic international order, some of the things will never succeed if the capital of the empire, you know, that is you are the empire, and New York and Washington are the capital of the empire. If you are not in that way, if you try to do some change in that sense, it's going to be more easy for us to follow. And I want to follow that change. But if not, it's going to be very difficult for us. And so what happens is that we don't have a lot of money, and we have to spend a lot of it in weapons and in the galactic war, you understand? And we should prefer to spend it in the progressive of the third world, and especially our third world, because we always have a small third world in our country. And this third world we have, the three parts are women, like all over the world. So I came here to explain what we do, but also to explain you that we cannot do better if you don't do a little bit better. Thank you very much.
Well, my name is Mary Nash. I'm from the University of Barcelona. I'm a historian, and I'm also in the Center for Women's History at the University of Barcelona. I'm actually Irish, but I'm Catalan by now, as I have been living there for 18 years. So I'm going to be speaking basically on the issue of the development of women's history in Spain, which I think will also illustrate the whole development or non-development of women's studies in Spain. We could say that where women's history and, to a degree less probably, women's studies on the whole, in Spain at this stage we are in the process of normalization and achieving a certain degree of consolidation. And so we are coming out of the silence on women, the invisibility of women's experience in all social sciences, history, etc. And probably by now we could say that where women's history is concerned, that it is becoming a more complex discipline which cannot be reduced to any one methodological or theoretical framework. Basically, I think if we take a view of the development of women's studies to a degree, and particularly women's history in Spain over the past 10 years, we can establish two different stages to my understanding. First stage, which can be dated from 1974 to 1981. In other words, I'm speaking about an experience that has only 10 years behind it. We develop much later than what would be your experience here in the United States, or even methodological formulations. The presentation of a few studies dedicated specifically to women and history. And it's also the stage when very few professionals, be they historians or sociologists or economists, etc., actually choose the subject of women as their primary option in research. It's also the stage of legitimization, so the very first time when the subject is openly broached and initially introduced in the field of academics. The second stage, from 1981 to 1985, is obviously a stage of greater consolidation, a wider proliferation of studies, a diversification of topics, and the dedication of a greater number of women to studying women as their main research option. And we also find a degree of occasional dedication to women's studies, both by women and by men. And then also in the second period, we have a much larger degree of institutionalization. So to take a look at the first period, in 1974, where women's history is concerned, I must say that there were only three women in Spain actually dedicating themselves full-time to research on women. In 1974, there were four master's dissertations presented, three in the area of contemporary history, one in the area of medieval history, two from Barcelona and two from Madrid. In fact, the two from Madrid actually coincided on their subject without realizing it. So that does also reflect even the lack of coordination among four people at the time. Why was this? Well, this obviously links up with what Anna has been telling us. The slow development of historiography on women, and that is also applicable to women's studies in general, of course has to be placed in the socio-political context of the time. Obviously, the political context of the repressive Franco regime made it very difficult to deal with any such topics. And where history is concerned, it made it very difficult for the renovating historiographical tendencies, the development of social history, for example, to actually penetrate into the academic world in Spain and be applied, which is even more difficult. That does not to say there was not a knowledge of it and that some exceptional figures actually did apply it, but basically until the late 70s we don't find an overall generalized use or of change in the historiographical focus. Now, not only that, but the actual political situation meant that there was a very large degree of politicization of historians, in the sense that we find that historians who consider themselves to be forming part of the overall opposition to the Franco regime in contemporary history tended to dedicate themselves to two topics. One was the study of the 1930s. The 1930s as the democratic liberal period which could be held up as a model that would legitimize resistance to the Franco regime, and in the second case to the study of the labor movement, to the study of the nationalist movement, in other words those movements that could also be put forth as models of resistance. So that was the background in which women historians who first attempted to deal with the issues of women found themselves, and they were logically to be conditioned by that.
Who were the three women? Could you?
The four women, I keep forgetting about one. The two women from Madrid were Rosa Maria Capel and Pilar González. They were dealing with women and suffrage, the concession of the vote to women in 1931. One of these was later published in book form. Rosa Maria Capel has then gone on to publish a book on work and education from 1900 to 1930. Pilar González's work has not been published. The other work was on medieval history. It was on women in the 13th century in Barcelona, Women and Everyday Life, which also has been published by Teresa Maria Viñoles. And the other work was my piece on women in the anarcho-syndicalist movement, which has also been published. Then also, of course, we must mention the development of the feminist movement in Spain at the time. And obviously the interest in women's history was stimulated by this parallel development of feminism in Spain. And as I was saying also, where the actual conditioning of historiography and the kind of history that was being studied meant that when we actually started studying women's history, we dealt with issues that were also being dealt with by general historians. So the first studies, as you can see, deal with women in the public arena, deal with the period of the 30s, deal with politics and deal with the labor movement. Now this of course is quite a different trajectory that we have in women's history in Spain to what would occur in France or in Italy, in the sense that in Italy, France, we find a development of social history that tends to center more in the private sphere on questions of domestic life, everyday life, pregnancy, the female world, culture, margination, symbolism, etc. Whereas in Spain, until very recently, most studies have tended to center on the public arena, and a lot on the issues of, I'll be coming to later on, questions like suffrage, the development of political feminism, on the labor movement, etc. At this time also, we had the very first development of the acceptance of women's history in the academia. It was very modest. In the sense that I think it was really a feat at the time, in 1975, for the very first time, an actual course on women's history was given in the Department of Contemporary History at the University of Barcelona. That course has continued and is still given today. Now, I insist on this because, in fact, it is the only course on women's history that has been in existence in Spain. until about last year, 2 years ago, now this is the second year, another course has been given at the Complutense University in Madrid, a doctoral course on an issue dealing with women's history. So what I am saying is that basically at this point in Spain, we do not have women's studies programs, we do not have degrees in women's studies, and we do not have an acceptance, an integration of courses within the actual university syllabus, or they are highly exceptional cases. There is, this is developing obviously, and we are very hopeful that in other universities very soon this will be so. Also at the, in the initial stage, the first stage I'm speaking about, the situation was made even more difficult by the scarcity of women in the university teaching staff. And this also continues to be the way today. For example, the latest figures for 1985, in spite of, as Anna has said, Spain's allegiance to the principles of equality and parity, in 1985, in the whole of Spanish university, it's all a public university, there aren't any private universities there, only 4.5 of the whole teaching staff, of all the teaching staff, are full professors. Females, 4.5 of the full teaching staff are professors, whereas 30% of the adjuncts are females. So that will just give you some idea of the conditions within the actual university there. Even, of course, even made more difficult 10 years ago. At that point in time, women's history was something considered to be rather exotic, slightly scandalous, at some stages forcibly resisted, and at other stages, I must admit, treated with tolerance, sometimes paternalistic, and other times with a very open interest. So we do find focuses where, in fact, there was not a specific objection to the development of women's history in the sense that it was seen as a path towards the general renovation and modernizing of historiography in general. In 1981, of course, by then we've had the political changes in Spain, the consolidation of the democratic state, which did lead to a greater degree of sensitivity. And also, for example, the creation of the Women's Institute in 1984, which is a state bureau dedicated to the protection of women, which indeed was a major force in helping the financing and the support for different initiatives. And also in the early 80s, we find the development of the first congresses and symposiums and conferences on women and of the first seminars and centers dedicated to women. Here, for example, within the university, we can speak about the seminar on women at the University, the Autonomous University of Madrid, which basically has focused on holding symposiums, practically one a year, on different subjects. It has held symposiums on history, on sociology, on economics, on literature, and some of these proceedings have been published. In the case of the University of Barcelona, which I will deal more about because it is the one center existing actually within the Spanish university that has a legal status as a center and also the only one dedicated specifically to history. Now, perhaps if I explain about this, you may get a better notion of the development and the evolution of women's history and also women's studies in Spain. This center was created in 1982. It forms part of what you could call a university institute, and it has carried out a number of tasks. It has quite a lot of projects underway. It is a center that offers library bibliographical facilities and offers sources. It compiles documentary sources, oral sources, iconographical sources. Here you have some of the posters of the Civil War, which are somewhat relevant to women, which you might like to pass around and take a look at. It has carried out a policy of basic infrastructural work, in the sense that one of its main projects has been the compilation of a bibliography, an annotated bibliography with abstracts of all existing sources in the libraries and archives in Barcelona, published between 1800 published between 1800 and 1939. Now, this is a major task. At the moment, we have over 3,500 abstracts written up. We hope to possibly finish this research within the next year and then proceed to publishing it and entering it in what we would hope by then to have as a bank of data. Also, within this instrumental field, what we have developed by one of the members of the team is a thesaurus, a non-sexist documental language for the indexing of historical documentation. Now, this thesaurus has been elaborated from the bibliography that I have mentioned. In other words, it has been developed from primary sources. It is obviously centered, therefore, on historical material, but also has obviously used, like Mansell book, et cetera, the existing sources, to give it, I think, it will be very functional as well for general social sciences. This has just been recently presented at the University of Barcelona as a master's dissertation, and we would hope to have it published in the near future. Apart from that, there are many research projects going on. The center is divided into medieval history, modern history, contemporary history, history of art. It also deals with the field of literature. It has an interdisciplinary bent in the sense that we also work a lot with anthropologists. And there are several different research historical projects going on that I don't think it's necessary to mention here. We also hope to develop other activities, and we are developing them, such as the coordination of research projects, and partly here, networking, getting to know what people are doing, exchanging information, etc. And next October, we are holding a congress, to which you are more than welcome if you can make it to Barcelona, dealing with the issue of the interaction between public and private sphere. This will be held in Barcelona. Here you have some circulars on it and some brochures on the center if you wish to pick them up afterwards. Then, I haven't actually checked the time.
Almost,
right. So I shall give you a very brief outline then about what we have been dealing with within women's history. As I've said, a lot of it has been dealt with the public arena and infrastructural work, the development of repertoires, the publication of historical texts. One of the main focuses has been precisely on the development of political feminism, on the debate on the concession of women's suffrage, where it is quite clear that there is an enormous degree of ambivalency among even left-wing parties with regards to the issue of the concession of the vote to women, not on a theoretical level, but on a very pragmatical political level. So that in the early 30s, we have this ongoing debate as to whether or not the vote should actually be conceded to women, which it was, and which was a logical venture within the establishment of a democratic liberal regime. But by now, it's fairly clear, be attributed to the pressure of existing feminist organizations. Because although our knowledge is still at this stage fairly fragmentary, what the first wave of feminism is in Spain is probably has some characteristics that make it quite different to the experience in the US, for example, in the sense that there is a very strong development of female associationism, but that does not necessarily mean that they were even suffragist. We have, I could say, probably the development of a more social feminism rather than a political feminism in Spain. Issues were education, access to culture, rather than the actual access to the vote. And within the development of female associationism, the Catholic conservative associations were indeed very strong. So there is not by any chance a clear, unambivalent approach, even by women themselves, and even at times by left wing women, on the actual issue of political feminism and the vote itself. These are some of the issues that have been dealt with. We have still many fields to cover, which I won't go into here. Another main subject of discussion has been the study of women in the dynamics of social change, the analysis of female protagonism in the working class movement, social conflicts, revolutionary processes, etc. And by now we have really, I think, rehabilitated female protagonism and questioned entirely the interpretive scheme of the absence of women from social conflict. In fact, even we now have actual data which shows that the presence of women in strikes in Spain was in the early 20th century actually higher than that of men. Of course, if one reads the texts on the labor movement in Spain, what we come up against obviously is the absence of reflection on the agency of women, but there are now some new studies that are throwing a lot of light on this. We also find, therefore, that women are actually present in the working class organization, the organized working class, from its very creation. For example, in the 1890s, we have a very first attempt to establish a federation of female working class associations, which does not work out, but which indeed is quite significant. And by the late 19th century, we have one of the first formulations, theoretical formulations at that stage, of the need to link up female oppression, female subordination, and female emancipation with the social struggle. Now, I think this is quite interesting because we do have in Spain what, to my mind, is a very unusual phenomena, a very unusual experience with respect to the rest of the labor movement in Europe, which is the creation and the following up of this idea, which was just expressed on an individual theoretical level in the early 20th century, in the mid-30s, to the development of a collective strategy of female resistance based precisely on the idea of the dual struggle, the social struggle and also the development of an actual, what one would call, feminist struggle. Naturally, this would have to be said within the context of the Civil War, of social revolutionary change, of the anti-fascist war going on at the time. And that would not mean to say that this particular organization, which was a female anarchist organization at the time, of its 20,000 members, I would not at all say that a big number of them actually identified with this theoretical feminist stance, but it is of itself very significant, as is the enormous mobilization of women in the anti-fascist resistance movement during the Civil War, although one could also probably conclude by saying that they did not necessarily signify a breakdown, or that did not signify a breakdown of gender discrimination, of job segmentation, but it was definitely a platform for the development of consciousness, social and female, and probably feminist consciousness at the time. Another area in which studies are also being developed, or the development of to a degree of everyday life and particularly reproductive issues. I think I'll just leave it there, reproductive issues in the 20s and 30s, which is one of the fields that within the centre we are working on. So, you know, if there are any questions, we can follow this up later on.
Before we follow, I would like to excuse our fair conference, Mercedes Villanova, that she should be here. She's a very good professor of the University of Barcelona. And she, you know, she has not been able to come. Just to tell you that she's an expert in women's elections and electoral systems. And she just published a book now about analyzes all the results of all the elections that had happened in Spain during the Republic, especially in Catalonia, just a part of Catalonia where we come, the three, and find out some interesting things about women's vote, analphabet's vote, and also she demonstrated that Senate, that means anarchism, that usually says that they were not going to vote. If you analyze well the results, you find that they said that they vote. So that's quite an interesting thing, and she told me to excuse her, and maybe she has a better time to come.
I heard a woman from this country of Italian background. She's written a book on Italian feminism, which is, it seemed very interesting to me. I have not read the book, I only heard her speak. But she said that in Italy, I'm asking it because Spain is also a southern country from Europe, different but yet probably has something to do. She said that Italian feminism at the present time was the furthest of all the feminist things. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But she said that the industrial part of Italy in the north and the great sense of woman in a certain sense in the south, even though women are the women of the shadows, if you will, as well there, she said that there was a sort of coalescing of those two in Italy. She also said that the legal things were further than in this country, in Italy. But she said that there was a kind of feminism that she thought others could learn from Southern Europe, but she was speaking now especially of Italy. I was wondering if there would be any parallel.
Well, first of all, I want to introduce you also, because she has been publishing things about women in the church, and I think it's quite interesting also that you are here. Well, it used to happen, they used to say that, you know, it used to seem that the countries of the south of Europe, we should have a lot of contacts and a lot of points of contact. And it's true, but we are also different. I mean, this is also true. What happened now, that what happened really now, is that, for instance, in Greenland now, they have organized quite well a women's movement. And for instance, it could seem a contradiction, but one of the leaders of the international feminist now, it's called Margarita, but then it's called Papandreou, that is not his name, her name, but his husband's name. But she's really quite a day, she's American as far as I know. So she's from the States. And, well, you know, Italy has always been for us a point of reference, it's true, like it has been France. Especially when we had such a lot of difficulties to make anything because we were not allowed. And we look a lot about Italy, but I should say that in our country what happens now, to tell you the truth, is that so many changes have been done, let's say from the top, let's say like that, because of democracy came and socialism came and so on.
that the organization of women, what we should say, left organization of women, they don't really go yet. They don't really go yet. Because, you know, it seems that things come because they come with a change. And that's why, this is my point of view, that's why I think we should try to organize ourselves from down, to make really efficace, from the bottom, to make them efficace. Because otherwise, you have the love from your side, but you are not strong to make it that this goes on from right. Your small street to your work, every day's work, to every day's house, to anything. And this is the thing I think we are still very weak. And we are very weak because, I should say, that we, our movement, Spanish movement, feminist, has been a very against what we say, hierarchy, you understand? And if you want really to organize something, I'm not saying that you must hierarchize it, but you must make some, you know, some sort of practicism that can go. For instance, you must resolve the problem how you get the money to go on. And you must find a way that somebody pays. And you must find a way to get that money. And if you are not a little bit organized, you are not able. So what happened now in Spain, what happened this time, last years in Spain, is that there has been a very good split of reivindication, you know, of movement, and it was very good that any time they said, let's go for a manifestation, that time, at the tower. And lots of women, you know, just what we call out on the way of autogestion, you know, they came and we meet together and everything. But the next day, nobody was able even to make a press note to correct what you were sure tomorrow was going to say. That we were less than what we were. That we the thing was not as nice as it was. Mm-hmm. And that what we were saying to happen, it was not exactly what we really did. You understand what we saw? I think that what happened now in Spain is to find a way separately of what it is, you know, people is very afraid of the manipulation of the political parties, and you understand. And it's clear, I think it's right. Because if you are not independent, you are not going to win anything. That's real. But families should find a way. Now we are lots of women are now, women are trying in that sense. In spite of that, I think in Italy, they have been always more with the two things together. I think they got organization of women quite settled, and they found before the way to make pressure over things. I think they, in that sense, you know, they have more experience than we have.
I would also add, is that Lucia
Bema?
I would say that her book is a little bit controversial.
Is it?
I mean, I don't think there's 100% agreement on that, that point of view. But, I'm sure it's like Spain. You can get coalitions on different issues. And what the interesting thing in Italy is that abortion is a very broadly accepted issue, including Southern women, and other things aren't. And I think that, I'm sure that that is true in Spain too. It may not be the same issue, but that it is, that her view is a little bit romanticized.
I only heard her once, so I haven't read the book. Yeah.